Welcome back to Small Town Missing. I'm Thomas.
I'm Will.
And I'm Rhonda.
And we want to thank everybody so much for tuning in and listening to us. You guys have made this a lot of fun. And we're hoping to continue expanding and growing and seeing where things go.
Yeah. So, Rhonda, what did you think about the Eliza Fletcher episode? Did you like it, like kind of going over it? And, you know, I know it's kind of new, but I've been enjoying doing these, like, you know, newer cases intermixed with, like, you know, we had that one with the three women that went missing in the 1960s. And, like, I don't know. We're kind of all over the board, I feel like.
We are all over the board. I'll give you that much. Yeah, you know, I think it is a good thing to put some of the more current missing. And I know that one was a missing and a murder. But to put something a little more relevant or more current out there. I like the historical ones because it's interesting to me to kind of speculate, you know, if they had DNA matches or, you know, ways that we have to find people these
nowadays,
days.
Yeah.
How easy would it have been back then?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Especially with all the, you know, they had the footage of them and, you know, things like that. That is crazy to think about what they could do with stuff like that nowadays.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Well, obviously people can disappear, but in like the Eliza Fletcher case, they found her fairly quickly compared to the historical cases that we have that no one ever finds.
Mm-hmm. And I've been enjoying kind of looking at all those. But like I said, Thomas said, I've been having a lot of fun with this, and I hope we can continue.
I hope so, too. I hope people enjoy it, that they put some reviews out there and maybe give us some pointers as to what we could improve, and just let us know.
Of course. I mean, we're only human. We're not going to be perfect.
Right. All right. Well, you ready to get started?
I am.
Let's go.
All right. Now, today, I've got a missing person, but I also have an update on a couple of our older cases we had done a few months ago.
I didn't know this, Rhonda.
Yeah, surprise. I'd mentioned it to Thomas when I was doing some research last night. But so I've got a couple of things to just kind of up a little more information. Not necessarily they found someone, but some more information about some past ones.
Okay.
Well, let me get started with this. This is our missing person this week is Deborah Deanne Poe. She was 26 years old when she vanished from the Circle K convenience store near Hall Road and Alamo Avenue in Orlando on February 4th, 1990. Now, she was originally from Northern Virginia. She had taken ballet lessons for 14 years, and she had dreams of becoming a professional dancer. But after moving to Orlando in 1989, she planned on someday opening a catering business.
Oh, okay, cool.
Now, she was working two jobs when she disappeared. She was a daytime clerk at the Orlando Sentinel retail sales department and worked night shift 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. five nights a week at the Circle K.
Gosh, she never was off.
I know. I don't know if the Sentinel job was maybe part-time because I don't know how she could have done two full-time jobs. There's just beyond me. I don't know how she could have.
Working like 24 hours a day, like.
Yeah.
At the time of her disappearance, she shared a duplex with roommate Laura Tillman, and she was saving to buy a home. And according to unsolvedmysteries.fandom.com, Deborah and Lori were friends in Virginia and had moved to Orlando just 4 months earlier.
Okay, so they kind of moved together?
They did.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, they'd been friends in Virginia and they moved together.
Okay, cool.
And Deborah's boyfriend, Scott Iago, was concerned about her safety and according to Charlie Project, sometimes stayed with her during the night shift. And I can certainly understand that.
Yes.
I mean,
definitely.
I don't get, and of course, this was 1990, and maybe it doesn't happen these days, but to put a woman alone in a convenience store, I don't know if I'd say creeps me out, but it's kind of scary. Like,
well, yeah.
It's not a good thing.
Exactly, because, like, I mean, no offense to, you know, anybody. I mean, I'd be uncomfortable, and I'm a lot bigger than she would have been, I'm sure, you know.
Oh, hey, even when we travel cross-country, I don't like walking into a convenience store after about midnight.
No.
You know, and we drive, like, I wouldn't say all night, but into the night.
Pretty close. Yeah.
Pretty close. Mm-hmm. And so I avoid convenience stores late at night just because you just don't know what could happen.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there have been a couple of 3 a.m. hotel hit-ups.
Yeah.
Well,
we do drive a long time.
Yeah, you've said in previous episodes that you would call your husband and kind of be like, hey, can you talk to me? Like, I'm on, you know, going out to my car, or, you know, things like that.
Oh, I did. And one place where I worked, I was like across the street from the hotel I was staying at. And so I would. When I'd leave the office at midnight, I'd call and say, hey, you're walking me to the hotel.
Exactly. Because if something happens, I want to hear it. So.
Yeah. He'll have a recording.
I know.
I remember some of those phone calls.
Yeah. And so sometimes he would stay with her. Now, according to Scott, men frequently bothered Deborah while she was working. Sometimes they were drunk.
Of course.
Yeah.
According to Charlie Project, a naked man had entered the store just weeks before Poe's disappearance, climbed over the counter trying to get to her.
A naked man?
Yeah. He chased her around the store, and she ran outside, and he followed her, and she just doubled back and shut the door and locked it.
Good.
And
had locked outside.
I would have just kicked him in the nuts and then walked away, but that's me.
You know exactly where to aim if he's naked.
Well,
there.
Yeah, there's no hiding that.
No hiding it.
I don't think I'd want to get that close.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. True. I wouldn't want to risk getting grabbed, but I mean, if you just do whatever you can to survive.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and here again, having one person alone, okay, maybe not necessarily just a woman alone, but one person alone in a convenience store is probably not a good thing.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
No,
yeah.
Exactly. Especially if they don't have, like, a camera situation or something like that either. So I don't know if her place would have had one, like the Circle K or whatever, but yeah, I don't know about that.
You know, and that's something we need to find out, because we've said this several times. 1990, I don't know if they would have had that technology widespread.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
I'll try to research that. That'll be my little homework assignment.
Okay. All right. On the night of her disappearance, Iaggi, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, I-A-G-G-I, had, and that's the boyfriend, Scott, had checked on Poe around 1 a.m., so he didn't stay the night. He had just checked in, make sure she was okay, and then went back to his apartment, I assume, or his home, and was going to check on her later, I'm sure. All was fine when he checked on her. And a friend drove by at 3 a.m. and could see Poe in the store behind the counter. So we know at 3 a.m. she was still there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, between 3:15 and 3:30 a.m., a customer entered the store and found a Caucasian man behind the counter. The customer didn't see anyone else in the store and assumed he was the clerk.
Oh.
He was wearing, and this is really detailed, he was wearing a black T-shirt with the Megadeth rock band logo, a skull ring on his, skull ring on his finger, a wire earring with a cross in his right ear. He had long black hair, dark eyes, and appeared between 19 and 25 years old.
Now, wait a minute. Wasn't there a serial killer in the 90s fitting that description? The, what was it?
You actually remember, shoot, I don't know, Thomas. You're remembering something I'm not.
He was in that season of American Horror Story.
Oh, yes. I know exactly who it was. I can't remember.
The Megadeth?
Well, he was like
T-shirt?
A...
T-shirt? That wasn't BTK. No, BTK's someone different.
No, he was a super rock fan who like associated satanic symbolism with rock.
Oh, my God.
Rock
the Night Stalker.
Yes. Night Stalker. Thank you.
I do remember that.
Wasn't he like the late 80s, early 90s?
I think that's when it was. I'm not sure. I need to research that, too. But I was just going to be like, oh, no, an emo. Like, that's what I was going to say. Like, you know, whatever.
No.
But no, I know exactly what you're talking about. And yes, I think the Night Stalker was the 90s, I believe. It's like late 80s, early 90s.
But was the Night Stalker in Florida?
I don't
this is. I'm
so.
Sorry, if I didn't say this, this is Orlando, Florida.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he was like
New York,
California.
Maybe?
Like, California? Yeah, I think so. Something like that.
Okay. And Charlie Project goes on to say that he appears to have driven a black van with a Megadeth mural on the side.
Oh, so he really liked that band, suppose.
I assume it was someone had seen it in the Circle K parking lot. Whenever this customer came in, I guess they noted, hey, look at the black van.
Because he's on a shirt, it's probably his van, you know?
Yeah, I would think so. So, and to me, that seems a lot of detail. I don't know if maybe the customer was that observant. Maybe there were more than one customer that came in and saw. Definitely the one. Or if maybe there was some security footage that had some information.
That's what I'm wondering. Yeah, since it's so detailed.
Yeah, that's interesting because we typically don't see a lot of detail like that.
Exactly.
Well, since you were talking about security footage, I was looking it up. CCTV has been around since... the 1940s.
You know, I do think I saw that too.
1940s?
I don't know. That's so weird.
Mechanical based originally, but it's been widespread use apparently since the 80s is what it looks like.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, yeah, I guess so. It's not out of the realm of possibility thinking that maybe there was a camera kind of maybe.
Could have been. And that's what caught some of this detail. Like I said, if I go into a store, I don't necessarily notice all of that.
No, I'm not a noticeable. Like I think one of those things. Like I would like to think that I'm very observant and stuff like that. But I mean, I couldn't tell anybody. Like if Thomas even came up and you know was wearing something, I probably couldn't remember what he was wearing. I don't pay attention to those kinds of things.
No.
Yeah, most people probably don't.
Yeah,
but fortunately, they did have this detail. And the customer asked for cigarettes, and she had to point them out to him, and he commented that she shouldn't smoke. and he used the cash register and made change for the customer. So apparently he was familiar with the cash register. I would be totally lost. I would have no idea.
By the way, don't tell me not to smoke. Just do your job.
Yeah.
There's a sketch of the man on Charlie Project, but he's never been identified.
That is so crazy. Because like I'm assuming, like you said, Rhonda, there wasn't an employee that was, you know, slated to be there. It was her that night. So it was Deborah. So I don't know what's going on with that.
Yeah, and I will, a little bit farther down, just before I wrap it up, I will give some more information as to who they think he was.
Okay.
But he's never been identified.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The police were called at 4 a.m. when a regular customer entered the store and found it empty. There was no sign of a struggle in the store. The cash register was undisturbed. A cup of coffee, a carton of chocolate milk, a stack of houseplants because she was saving to buy a home,
aww,
and Deborah's neatly folded Circle K smock were found behind the counter.
That's very, I mean,
that just sounds creepy.
Yeah, everything's just left. It's like she evaporated.
Yeah, and it's not like she was going to get off work anytime soon because this was 4 a.m. and her shift ended at 7 a.m.
Yeah, 7.
Yeah. So, and Poe's new red Toyota Celica was parked in the parking lot, Circle K parking lot. Her purse and her paycheck were locked inside.
It's very odd, Rhonda.
Yeah. According to the Orlando Sentinel article by Tiffany Waldron from February 3rd, 2015, detectives at first thought Deborah may have left the store on her own. And I assume that's because there's no sign of a struggle.
Yeah, like there's nothing there.
However, her aunt Judy Johnson, her father Alan Poe, and Scott Iyagi said that she was way too responsible to just walk away. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, she left everything that she would have needed. Like, I mean, she needs money and stuff if you're just going to leave your paycheck there.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Why would you do that? Mm-hmm. And why would you leave your new car there?
Yeah, your new car. And I don't know. That I don't see that.
Yeah, I don't see it either. Tracking dogs traced Deborah Scent to the rear of the store over a wooden fence into a road. Investigators believe she was forcibly taken from the store and put into a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Authorities stated they had a suspect in her abduction March 2002, but the suspect was never named. Land near Chapel Hill Baptist Church in Orange County was searched around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Scott had been a pastor at the church at one time, but he has never been identified as a suspect, I'm sorry,
mm-hmm,
and has passed a polygraph test. According to unsolvedmysteries.fandom.com, there is a possibility Deborah was the victim of a serial killer. On August 6, 1989, clerk Donna Callahan vanished from Gulf Breeze.
Mm.
On September 18, 1989, clerk Darlene Messer vanished from Lake City.
All these D's, too. They all start with D's. That's weird.
I hadn't even thought about that.
I know. That's very weird.
Darlene was later found murdered. Now, according to NWFDailyNews.com, December 3rd, 2016, article by Tom McLaughlin, Mark Reiby, I think I'm saying this right, mm-hmm, R-I-E-B-E, was convicted in 1997 for participating in the murder of Donna Callahan. Reiby's half-brother, William Alex Wells, had led authorities to Callahan's body in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
Both men are serving life sentences.
Any similarities to appearance or anything, Rhonda, that you know of or anything like that to that guy that they say was behind the counter?
I would say not.
Yeah.
I think that would have been
something
that
said.
I say that, but actually, there, from what I've read, there was someone. Let's see if I can find it real quick.
I'm sorry, Rhonda.
You threw me off my notes.
I know. We have our scripts here.
Someone had seen, oh, dadgum, I can't find it in my notes.
We'll get to it. Don't worry,
I'm sorry.
We'll come back to it.
Sorry,
Will
folks.
Will likes to jump ahead of the story.
I know.
Yeah, he does.
I'm a captive audience here.
Well, as Will said, we're not perfect. Okay, so both men are serving life sentences. Florida Department of Law Enforcement agent Dennis Haley believes Mark Reiby may be involved in as many as 6 deaths.
Good Lord.
And from what I've read, most of those murders occurred in Northwest Florida, like the panhandle.
Yeah.
And just looking it up on the map, Gulf Breeze and Lake City are in that area.
Okay.
So they're not near Orlando. I was expecting to find these two, I assume, small towns to be near Orlando, but I didn't see that.
But no such luck. I guess they're a lot farther than we thought.
Right. But from lostandfoundblogs.com, Agent Haley states Mark and his brother Alex were together that weekend,
mm-hmm,
the weekend that Deborah disappeared, and they had a close relative in the area. But I don't know. That seems a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I mean, but I guess it does kind of technically not necessarily tie them to it. But, you know, I guess there would be some reason as to why they would be there potentially if they were looking at them as, like, possible perpetrators. But, I mean, I guess we don't know for sure.
No. Yeah, there's always a possibility. I mean, mm-hmm. if they know they were in the area at the time, that's a possibility. But mm-hmm. my guess, and, you know, here we are speculating, you know, someone probably was watching, realized, oh, hey, look, she's working alone, 11 to 7. Sometimes someone's with her, sometimes someone's not. And yeah. they probably came up with a pattern maybe or were just watching.
Yeah.
And found an opportunity and just took Deborah. I mean, after all, like I said, she was alone and there wasn't always someone with her.
No. And I mean, how easy is it to, at that time in the morning, because I'm assuming there's not a lot of people there, just to go into somewhere and try to attack somebody in a gas station? That would probably be very easy.
Yeah. And as for the man in the Megadeth t-shirt, in 1996, investigators stated they think he may be a witness and a boyfriend of another clerk at the store.
Oh.
He's never been identified. And this came from a November 23rd, 1996 Orlando Sentinel article.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't get that. It's yeah. like that would be easy to rule him out.
Yeah. And then why is he there if Deborah was the one that was working?
Right. Why would the boyfriend be there and not the employee?
Yeah. And like, why is he behind the counter? He don't work there.
Yeah. And he's never been identified. So if that were the case, unless I'm missing something, I yeah. think he would be fairly easy to identify. So Deborah was 5'2 to 5'3. And weighed 100 pounds when she disappeared.
Bless, I'm telling you, that seems like that's so odd, Rhonda. Just like the fact that she basically just disappeared and nobody saw anything. Although the time of night, I mean, whatever time they're thinking, I guess around that 4 a.m.
Yeah, between 3 and 4.
Yeah, so I mean, nobody would be on the road typically there. I mean, like, I know I've worked some places where I'm going back and there's very little. I mean, I know that's around here, but I can only imagine,
yeah,
you know?
I've been driving home late at night like that too.
And I know we're not as big as Orlando.
But, yeah, but there's nothing.
No, I mean, just easy to do something like that, I guess.
Well, and I'm not sure how large Orlando was in 1990.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it was much smaller than it is now, but, you know, you're obviously you're right. There would be much more traffic than what we would typically see in a small town.
Mm-hmm. But still, that late at night, it's not likely to have
much. Yeah, because everybody's, you know, at home, assumingly, you know.
Yeah, you would think. And according to the Orlando Sentinel article, Deborah's father and brother have died since her disappearance, leaving her mother, Nancy, to continue the search.
Isn't that terrible, too? Like, she doesn't have any, you know, kind of support system at this point, assumingly, to be like, I mean, that's so sad.
It is sad. All right. I do have a couple of updates. Like I said, this is from the Birmingham Real-Time News, published March 10th, 2022. Karen McPherson, who has been in prison for over 30 years for her part in the kidnapping of Carrie Lawson.
Yes!
September 11th, 1991, has been denied parole.
She should, by the way.
I would agree with that.
For sure.
Yeah, Carrie and her husband Earl received a call. If you guys haven't listened to the podcast, you need to listen to the podcast.
I listened to it live.
It's really interesting. Carrie and her husband Earl received a call at 3 a.m. from a woman claiming to be a nurse and informing them a family member was in the hospital. When the couple stepped out of their home to get into their vehicle, a gunman appeared, tied Earl up, and took Carrie. Now, despite paying $300,000 in ransom, Carrie has never been found.
Mm.
Lawson's sister attended the hearing, and she stated that McPherson's role has been understated, as she couldn't understand how someone who spent some time alone with Carrie after the kidnapping
mm-hmm.
could not do something to stop her
exactly.
murder.
And like not say where she is after all this time.
Yeah.
And she may not know.
True.
That would be my guess, because you would think if she knew that, then she would kind of play that as a, you know, if we cut this sentence or give me parole next time around, then I can tell you where she is. But apparently that's not the case. So my guess is she does not.
Maybe she doesn't. That's true.
Yeah. And just reading back on this, because it's been a while since we had done that podcast, she said that Carrie was alive up to 2 days after the kidnapping. She knew that much. And I'm trying to remember the guy's name who killed her. I think it was like Jerry Bland. And
That sounds familiar.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had it up on my laptop, but I don't have my laptop handy. But Jerry, we'll go with that. we assume he's the one that killed her.
Yeah.
And he committed suicide.
We will never know for sure. Yeah.
Right. Whenever I think it was the FBI surrounded his home, he killed himself. Mm-hmm.
That's episode, what, 3? I think that was either 3 or 4.
Yeah, it was one of the early ones.
It was one of the earlier ones.
Some time ago. And he had left a note, suicide note, when he died.
Yeah.
Or when he killed himself. But no information as to where she might be.
And that's so, yeah. I hate that. That is just so, that seems like that could have been a very easily, like, at least they could, like, let us know where her body is or something. You know?
You would think. Let's, yep. We need some closure.
Exactly.
Yeah. But apparently, like I said, McPherson must not know where Carrie is, or she would have said something by now. She's been in jail for 30 years.
Yeah.
And she comes up for parole, again, eligible for parole in 5 years. Okay. And our second update.
Oh, my God. Rhonda. That's crazy.
And this one is even more interesting, is regarding the disappearance of Lynn Burdick.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
From the Berkshires.
From the Berkshires, yes, that's right. On April 17th, 1982, from Florida, Massachusetts. And just think about this. This is very similar to the one we just did with Deborah Poe.
Yep.
Because Lynn was a convenience store clerk.
Yes,
and disappeared.
I was thinking about that's this right. case during it.
Yes, and this information comes from, and I won't do the whole link because it's quite lengthy, but it will be in our show notes, but the information comes from newbedfordguide.com, Massachusetts, and it goes from there. And like I said, we'll have this in our show notes. The district attorney's, Berkshire District Attorney's Office and the Massachusetts State Police Berkshire Detective Unit have released a new forensic sketch and 4 age-progressed variations of a suspect. The sketches are of the suspect in the Williamstown abduction attempt, which occurred 45 minutes earlier and 13 miles away in Williamstown. Remember, we covered this in the podcast.
Yes,
someone reported, I think it was a student on the campus in Williamstown, someone had tried to abduct her,
and she
managed to get away. And this was, I don't recall the time of evening, but it was just shortly before, I think it was Lynn's aunt or cousin came to check on her and she was gone.
Yep. And, and we, that was one of our kind of why we were talking, while we've been on this about women in convenience stores, like working those jobs. It just sucks that they don't have any other people there with them half the time, you know?
Even just a man by themselves in a store like that.
That's scary.
There needs to be at least 2 people, if not 3.
Or one of those like little security screens, you know, like some places have, you know?
Yeah, there needs to be some way for them to be secure in a crappy situation.
Yeah, I would agree. 2 people, or like you say, Will, if you're like in an enclosure and no one can get to you, I mean, maybe you have a counter and then maybe you have like glass that comes down or something.
Yeah.
You're in a more like a cage
yep.
where no one can come in or
like
physically
that.
Come in contact with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that would work.
And that was our 18th episode, by the way. I looked back.
Oh, you wow. Our 18th
episode.
You
were really thinking about that episode.
I was. Time. That was our 18th episode.
Okay. And let's see. Okay, 4 different age progressions, one with a beard, one with a mustache, and one that's bald.
Oh, wow. So we have a lot of like options here, potentially, as to like maybe how this person could look different and everything.
Exactly. And this is as of progressed as of age 70, but they have the one where what the suspect looked like in 1982, and then the age progression ones. And authorities worked with law enforcement forensic artist with the Lincoln Police Department to generate the sketches based on recent case interviews.
That's so cool. That's so cool.
So they're still obviously out there. This is still an open case.
Yep.
And as you recall, I believe it was Lynn's, I can't remember if his cousin or sister, who put up billboards fairly recently about her case in that area.
Yep. Just to garner more interest in the case.
Yes, because she had set up a GoFundMe page to raise money to have the money to put the billboards up.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is, you know, has generated more interest, and maybe people have come forward saying, hey, I may have something to add to this case.
Yeah, which hopefully, maybe that's what kind of sparked the new interest in it, I'm hoping.
I hope so, too. The suspect is a white man, 5'7", and is now approximately 70 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe he may have ties to the state of Vermont. Anyone with information on this case should contact the Berkshire State Police Department, State Police Detective Unit at 413-499-1112.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That is so cool, Rhonda.
Yeah.
That's so weird. I was thinking about the Berkshire. Like, I was just thinking about that case and that you had, like, the update to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an interesting case. And like I said, pretty much the exact same thing that we've just done with Deborah Poe.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look how many we've done that are like that, where someone was in a store.
But yeah.
No, the Lynn Burdick one really just jumps out.
I know Lynn's and Deborah's off the top of my head for sure. I had forgotten the if we did any others, but I knew that one had a correlation, and I was going to mention it, but I was like, oh, well, let me try to remember some of the specific details before I did. But that's so cool that you actually mentioned it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening. If you like the podcast, please tell others about us and share. And you can reach out to us on Instagram, Small Town Missing. You guys have anything else you want to add?
I'm good.
Just if you can, leave a comment. Tell us what you think. If you've got any cases you want us to look into, please let us know.
Yeah, we do occasionally get a request for someone.
We do.
I think the one from last week was a request.
Yep. Eliza's was. And that one, as sad as that one was, it just serves as a reminder, you guys, just to stay safe out there for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, and you were asking me about that, my opinion of that. The part that really got to me were the people who came together to finish Eliza's run.
Isn't that crazy?
Mm-hmm. What was that, on the September 9th, I believe?
I think that was right.
At 4:30 in the morning, so about the same time that she was abducted.
Exactly. And isn't that crazy? That's just like, it makes you think, because you always kind of hear the bad stuff of the world, and then I hear about things like that, and I'm like, okay, it gives me a little semblance.
There's a little bit of hope, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I believe at that early hour,
yep,
there were like between 2,000 and 3,000 people that showed up.
Of course, and it just, you know, there should be some camaraderie, and just like we should all just try to, like, you shouldn't have these problems, you know, in today's society. You just shouldn't have that issue of a woman having to worry about losing her life just by exercising in the morning. And it's sad, but I am glad that, like, you know, her family is kind of seeing the outpouring of support that they have.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll have another episode of Small Town Missing next week.
Yes.
All right, guys. Thank you so much, and catch you then.